And
Oh, you're done.
that's what happened last
That's
time.
what happened.
Oh man, yeah, because I just thought that when you approved it that I was good to
That would
go.
be all good to go. Yeah,
And
this.
now I made sure that I did it again. So that's what happened. So the whole, yeah, okay.
Whole F1 was lost. Which incidentally was what? Because it's been a long time now. I don't even know where we are.
We are
No,
on Joshua.
we're in Joshua still. Okay.
Yes. I think last time we had gone through Deuteronomy.
Okay, so let me find where the my Joshua notes are. Oh man.
Which
Another here somewhere.
Deuteronomy for
I'll find it. Just a
record
minute.
was not recorded.
Joshua.
I
Okay.
love how it looks in the camera now. You can see the gray of the kitchen and the white cabinets. It all
Oh
looks really
yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah,
nice.
it's very good.
Instead of having all that brown and everything.
All right. Let's open with prayer. Father, thank you. We can meet again and look into your word. Be with us now. Speak to our hearts in Jesus' name. Amen.
So I have not had time to pre-read anything in Joshua.
Okay, that's all right. Let's see what we can do. I had a few notes here. I can't believe you know when I that I was doing this in March. It's almost a month ago.
Oh,
Amazing.
really?
Yeah. I was reading this and the first thing I have is in Joshua 7.
Okay.
And in verses 7 through 15 in particular. So let me see what they're about.
Is this, by the way, is it pronounced
Yeah.
AI or I or A or the city
What's pronounced?
in chapter 7 of
Oh.
Joshua?
I see. Let's see. AI. I've heard it pronounced. Now, yeah, I've always heard it pronounced at AI.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's right. But we can go with that. Okay.
Okay.
I have no idea what the Hebrew pronoun it looks if I were to look at this, just judging from the Hebrew letters, I would almost say it's I or I mean could be I don't know. I haven't heard it ever pronounced any other way than AI, so we'll go with that. Yeah, so do we need to refresh our memories on the story? Basically, they're told to go in and do battle with AI. Well, but wait a minute. Let's start with verse 1 to get the. It says the Israelites violated the prescription. So they had already had a. They had already had a battle in chapter 6. They were told not to take any of the spoil. And this prescription that they violated is that Carmi, or Carmi, the son of Zabdi, son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, took of that which was prescribed, and the Lord was incensed with the Israelites. And when they go into battle the next day, they think it's going to be easy because they just fought the entire city of Jericho. And it says Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which flies close to Beth-Aven, east of Bethel, with orders to go up and spy out the country. So the men went up and spied out Ai. They returned to Joshua and reported to him, "Not all the troops need go up. Let 2 or 3,000 men go and attack Ai. Do not trouble all the troops to go up there, for the people there are few." So about 3,000 troops marched up there, but they were routed by the men of Ai. The men of Ai killed about 36 of them, pursuing them outside the gates as far as Shavarim and cutting them down along the descent. And the heart of the troops sank in utter dismay. So what they've experienced here, after experiencing victory in the past, all of a sudden they're experiencing defeat, which is comes as quite a shock to them. And it says Joshua thereupon rent his clothes, he and the elders of Israel lay until evening with their faces to the ground in front of the ark of the Lord, and they strewed earth on their heads. Ah, Lord God, cried Joshua, why did you lead this people across the Jordan only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to be destroyed by them? If only we had been content to remain on the other side of the Jordan. Oh Lord, why can I, what can I say after Israel has turned tail before its enemies? When the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land hear of this, they will turn upon us and wipe out our very name from the earth. And what will you do about your great name? So that's Joshua's prayer, which is why I included this. The Lord answers Joshua and says, why do you lie prostrate? Israel has sinned. They have broken the covenant by which I bound them. So here we have a prayer inquiring why things are not working out. God responds, tells him it's sin that you've got to deal with. I have notes here. Compare Joshua 7:21 with 2 Kings 5:21 and John 7:10. So I want to look at 7:21 next,
Well, we
where
haven't gone to Joshua 7:21, have we?
no, we haven't. I'm just saying, well, you want to read the rest of this? Okay.
Well.
So the Lord answered Joshua, arise, why do you lie prostrate? Israel has sinned. They have broken the covenant by which I bound them. They have taken of the prescribed and put it in their vessels. They have stolen, they have broken faith. Therefore, the Israelites will not be able to hold their ground against their enemies. They will have to turn tail before their enemies, for they've become prescribed. I will not be with you anymore unless you root out from among you what is prescribed. Go and purify the people. Order them, purify yourselves for tomorrow. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, something prescribed is in your midst, O Israel, and you will not be able to stand up to your enemies until you have purged the prescribed from among you. Tomorrow morning you shall present yourselves by tribes. Whichever tribe the Lord indicates shall come forward by clans. The clan that the Lord indicates shall come forward by ancestral houses, and the ancestral house that the Lord indicates shall come forward man by man. Then he was indicated for prescription, and all that is his shall be put to the fire, because he broke the covenant of the Lord and because he committed an outrage in Israel. Early next morning, Joshua had Israel come forward by tribes, and the tribe of Judah was indicated. He then had the clans of Judah come forward, and the clan of Zerah was indicated. Then he had the clan of Zerah come forward by ancestral houses, and Zabdi was indicated. Finally, he had his ancestral house come forward man by man, and Achan, son of Carmi, son of Zabdi, son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, was indicated. Remember, we were talking the other night, or last time, about the red cord that was tied around the two twins, one of the two twins.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't
Yeah.
remember. That was talking about Esau, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't Esau, and I was telling you it was Zerah and what was his brother his name? Which And we were
I'm
talking
pretty
about the
sure that
descendant.
that was Jacob and Esau.
You were saying that, but it isn't.
What?
No, it's not. Let's look now.
Why
Let's
would I
go
know?
back. There
Okay.
was.
Wow, if that was a
We
trivia
should
question, I
look.
would have gotten that. How
Yeah, that would have got.
is
We
that
got to look
possible?
at. We should look at both of them.
I'm like,
We
what?
got to look at the story. The story of Zerah is going to be in
No,
Genesis.
because he drew his hand out first, and she tied a red cord around it, and then he would put his hand back in, and then she said, "This breach be upon you."
That's right. You have the, it's this breach. And what's the word for breach? It's Paris. And that's why that's the other name. It was Zara and Paris. Okay. But let's look at Esau, Jacob and Esau. And just, I mean, there's got to
Yeah,
be
let's
something
look at it.
very similar that's getting us confused. So I want to go find when Jacob and Esau were born, because there was, and I know it's getting us confused because when Esau came out, it says that he was all red, and there's that word red again, right?
Yeah.
But let me see if I can find it. That's going to be a tricky one.
It's in Genesis. Let's see if I can find it. In fact, here, I know how I can do it really quick.
You'd have to look it up, I know. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Birth of Jacob and Esau.
Oh, that's Isaac's son, right?
Yes.
So it's got to be after. This is the story of Isaac. Isaac be. Okay. Two nations are in your womb. Two separate people shall issue from your body. That's. It says in chapter
Genesis
20,
25.
25, yeah.
Yes.
That Rebecca conceived, but the children struggled in her womb, and she said, "If so, why do I exist?" She went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord answered her, "Two nations are in your womb, two separate peoples shall issue from your body. One people shall be mightier than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first one emerged red like a hairy mantle all over, so they named him Esau. Then
What
is
verse are you on?
verse 25.
Okay.
26 says, then his brother emerged, holding on to the heel of Esau. So
Oh.
name him Jacob. So you have Jacob and Esau, and there is one that comes out first, and the other is hanging on to his heel. So it's very similar, and there's that word red there too. But if you go over to the story of Judah, which is going to be much later. But before we get, let's see, I think it's 38, chapter 38, where it says that Judah, had sex with his, unbeknowingly, with his daughter-in-law Tamar.
Yeah.
In verse 24, and it says, when the time came to her for her to give birth, there were twins in her womb. Sounds just like the other story. While she was in labor, one of them put out his hand, and the midwife tied a crimson thread on that hand to signify this one came out first. But just then he drew back his hand, and out came his brother, and she said, "What a breach you've made for yourself." So he was
Yes.
named Perez. Afterward, his brother came out, whose hand was the crimson thread. He was named Zerah. And we were talking about the genealogies of Christ, and we were saying, I think, if I recall right, isn't it strange? Maybe I wasn't talking with you about this.
I don't remember. I think you're
Maybe it
probably
was
talking to Anthony.
Anthony. Maybe
Yeah.
it was.
Because I don't recall having this conversation at
I
all.
must have had it with Anthony. Because we were saying, isn't it strange that you would think the crimson thread would indicate the line of Christ?
Right.
But it isn't, because Christ descended from Perez. If look in, let's look at the genealogies and especially since Zerah means seed.
In fact, there's so many I always thought that the crimson thread was a direct sign of that.
Well, maybe I'm very wrong. Let me see.
I mean, I even remember Paul Washer saying once
Oh.
that something is that, I don't know, I can forget, but he referenced that. It was like,
Okay, just a minute. Let's go back here. Okay, in verse 3 of Matthew, it says, "And Judas begot Perez and Zerah of Tamar, and Phares begot Ezra, and Ezra begot Aram." So he's taking the genealogy from Perez down all the way to Christ. Now we can look in Luke, and you're going to see the same thing. There's no question about that, right? Matthew 1:3.
right.
So if we go to Luke, where is the genealogy in Luke? It comes in Luke. Okay, it's in chapter 3. And it's you look at verse 33, where he talks about Nason, which was the son of Amminadab, which was the son of Aram, which was the son of Ezram, which was the son of Perez, which was the son of Judah. So in both genealogies, it's Perez, not Zerah.
Okay.
That's interesting. And it's the one who does not have the crimson thread tied around him. But I know what you mean. I think I've heard sermons preached on that too, and it's totally
Yeah, I think he said something like, I hope to swing into eternity on that crimson thread or something like that. It's
And
like,
they related to Joshua because the crimson rope was tied in
yeah.
the fall of Jericho, which is more logical because
You know, there
that
are things in the Bible that are contradictory. I mean, I don't,
that's not
maybe I shouldn't say that.
contradicting, it's just not what you
Yeah,
expect.
not contradictory, but for example, that's a great one that you just brought up. I always thought it was strange too that whenever the Israelites were bitten by a snake or something, they were to look at the bronze serpent.
Yeah.
It's like, why would they look to a serpent to be healed?
Well, I've always thought that
And
too.
they
I
were,
heard, I was reading,
and it's
I
like
was
they would
reading
look
something.
to a serpent,
I read something about that last week, but I don't know if I can explain it, but it seemed to make it a lot clearer to me. It's not that they were looking to the serpent to be healed. It's what was it? I think what the explanation was that this is a picture of Christ dying for the sin of taking on the sin of man and dying in place of man. Because, and I think Jesus says, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up.
But why is a serpent used as the image?
Because
That's what's strange.
that's because when Christ went to the cross as the Son of Man to die for Adam's sin, Adam, what when Adam, the picture apparently is that when Adam sinned, he was bitten by the serpent and in essence be. Had that nature took on into him, took into him the nature of that serpent. Just as in Israel, the Israelites, when they were in the wilderness, they were bitten by the serpent and they took on or had this poison in them that had to be healed. Just like we have
But
because of our.
just as the
So
cure
we.
for a snake bite is snake venom.
Well, aside from that, yeah, aside from that. This meeting is being recorded. It says, okay. Aside from the fact that that's a very interesting point, but in this particular story, the reason I think Jesus could say, as Moses lifted up the serpent, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, because the condition of the Israelites after they had been bitten was very much like the condition of man after Adam had succumbed to the temptation of Satan. He not only sinned against God, but sin entered into him. That poison entered into him. And when Christ died in place of Adam, so to speak, to free us from that curse, and that's why he said, as Moses lifted up, as the children of Israel gazed upon that serpent, what they were in type doing was gazing upon Christ on the cross, who had taken on the sin of man. He was made sin for us, that it says, Paul says, that we might become the righteousness of God. I think in Romans it says that. Maybe we should look that up, but.
So the that's one, and then obviously all of the parables of the kingdom of heaven, those are all confusing
Those
too.
are hard. Those are hard. And
So
I
I
think
don't know what
that's
to make of it.
from becoming too dogmatic sometimes.
Yeah.
We got to keep an open mind. But this is good. So this was not the son, this was the descendant of the boy with the crimson thread on his hand, too. Not the line of Christ. Just interesting. And I
Yeah.
didn't realize that until I just read that. This is the first time I've ever realized that.
Yeah, I always would have thought the same thing.
Well, I knew about the crimson thread being on Zerah, but what I didn't realize is that Achan was a descendant of Zerah until just this time when we read it, which is amazing how you can read this stuff 100 times and you'll always see something new. So we were trying to get to verse 21. 19 said, then Joshua said to Achan, my son, pay honor to the Lord, the God of Israel, and make confession to him. Tell me, what have you done? Do not hold anything back from me. Achan answered Joshua, it is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. This is what I did. I saw among the spoil a fine shiner mantle, 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, and I coveted them and took them. They are buried in the ground in my tent with the silver under it. Now, what the reason I wanted to compare this with 2 Kings is this is really, you talk about the story almost ringing. Can you remember what story in Kings this is similar to? Especially these words here. I saw this in among the spoil, the fine shinar mantle, 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold, and I covered them and took them. They are buried in the ground in my tent with the silver under it. Look,
And actually,
in 2 Kings, there is a story about, I think it's Elisha and his servant. I think his servant was Gehazi. And this is after the healing of Naaman the Syrian. And Naaman wants to reward Elisha. And Elisha says, no, I don't want any of your reward. And then Naaman says to him, well, if you don't want a reward, can I take a wheelbarrow or a load of dirt from the land of Israel back with me? Because I'm never going to worship anybody but the God of Israel from now on. That's an interesting thing too. Why would he want a load of dirt because of the fact that he now believes in the God of Israel?
I can only
Yes.
guess that it would be because he wants some of the Holy Land with him.
Well, it very much along those lines. It's because the gods in the old time, in that era, people considered that the gods were gods of a particular land. In fact, later on, when after the Assyrians captured, or the Assyrians when they captured the northern tribes of Israel and deported them, they deported everybody from the 10 tribes, the so-called 10 lost tribes from that land, and they imported other people from other territories that they controlled, who became the quote-unquote Samaritans, because it was in the area of Samaria. When they did that, the people that they had imported into the Samaria area complained to the king and said, "We're being attacked by lions and we're being killed, and it's because we don't know the rules of the god of this land." And so the king Sennacherib said, "Okay, send one of the prophets that we've deported from there back to the land to teach the people the laws of the God of Israel," which he did, and they did. And then it says they obeyed the, they still worship their gods, but they also worship the God of Israel. It's one of those, it's where the mixture, and I think it's talking about the danger of mixing two different traditions. And it's why there was always this tension between the Jews and the Samaritans, because they saw them as being, yeah, you believe in the God of Israel, but you're not really, you're still holding on to all your gods. So what is this kind of thing? But after that happened in 2 Kings 5, Gehazi gets the idea, wait a minute. This guy was going to give a reward to my master. He probably was going to give him a lot of money, or was willing to, because he came with camels and everything else loaded down with goods. I'm going to go get something. So it says, let's see, when, let's see, where is it? Verse 21. Well, I'll start with 20. Gehazi, the attendant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, "My master has let that Aramean Naaman off without accepting what he brought. As the Lord lives, I'll run after him and get something from him." So Gehazi hurried after Naaman. When Naaman saw someone running after him, he alighted from his chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" "All is well," he replied. "My master has sent me to say, two youths, disciples of the prophets, have just come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothing." Naaman said, "Please take 2 talents." He urged him, and he wrapped the 2 talents of silver in 2 bags and gave them, along with 2 changes of clothes, to two of his servants who carried them ahead of him. When Gehazi arrived at the citadel, he took the things from them and deposited them in the house. Then he dismissed the men, and they went their way. He entered and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" He replied, "Your servant has not gone anywhere." Then Elisha said to him, "Did not my spirit go along when a man got down from his chariot to meet you? Is this a time to take money in order to buy clothing and olive groves and vineyards, sheep, oxen, and male and female slaves? Surely the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever." And as Gehazi left his presence, he was white. He was snow white with leprosy. Verse 23, he wrapped the 2 talents of silver in 2 bags, and then it says he took them and deposited them in the house. So it's similar, you know, where he takes them and wraps them up and then hides them in his dwelling, like Achan did. But what I see even more interesting is this thing where he says, "Surely the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants." There is in Joshua a hint of that.
That's a really good parallel, then.
And did you pick up what that hint was in Joshua? Let's see.
With the leprosy?
Yeah. In Joshua 7, seven 21. Well, that's when he confesses, but I want to look. Oh, it's in verse 10. When the Lord answered Joshua, he says, "Arise, why do you lie prostrate? Israel has sinned. They have broken the covenant by which I bound them. They have taken what the prescribed and put it in their vessels. They have stolen and broken it. Therefore, the Israelites will not be able to hold their ground. They will turn tail there be there before their enemies, for they have become prescribed." In other words, they took this prescribed thing, and it resulted in that like uncleanness that was attached to the, because that's what it be, that uncleanness became part of them because they took of the prescribed thing. They became prescribed. Just like when Gehazi took the gold of and the silver from Naaman, the leprosy that Naaman had that was forgiven but originally had now clung to Gehazi. And in John's, I have a comparison with John.
So if you steal from someone who's sick, you're probably going to get sick.
That's not, I don't know about that. If you, not if you steal from someone who's sick, but it's not the, I don't think you could make a rule out of that. I think the point is that the sin, it's, how can it's like
Like,
the
what if you
goal.
took advantage of someone who was dying of cancer? I don't know. Maybe I'm getting off track.
In other words, let's assume, I think what is happening here with Naaman, it doesn't say this, but there, when he had his leprosy healed, it's because sin was forgiven. God forgave it. In all cases, healing is symbolic of the forgiveness of sin. And I think that's why Elijah wouldn't take the gold, because it was like the gold that Naaman possessed was tainted in some way by sin. I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't a matter of stealing anything. It was a matter of this was unholy. And Elijah didn't want it. He was the servant of God. He healed him because God told him to heal him, and he was forgiven. But his servant lusted after that gold. And in essence, the same sin that was probably the sin that was attached to that gold was lust. And it was therefore that the leprosy that was associated with that gold adhered to Naaman. I think that's the way to look at it. Similarly,
That's
with
interesting.
Achan,
That's why they wouldn't take the money that Judas tried to return.
I'm sure.
Because
It
they said, oh
was
no, that's.
unholy. You can't, you put that in the treasury, in the temple treasury. It's blood money.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing with Achan. Achan lusted after this gold. It was, they were clearly commanded, don't take it. He took it anyway. And so not only him, but the whole tribe of Israel became proscribed. And that's because there's a lot of, that's a whole nother topic of corporate
That's
guilt.
so interesting that there's that link between those, like those possessions become linked with the act. In other words, prior to the 30 pieces of silver that they gave Judas, they were just
Just 30
30
pieces of
pieces of
silver.
silver. They were okay to be used indiscriminately. But as soon as they were used to betray Christ, now that's there. Those 30 pieces of silver are linked to that.
Although, you know, the Bible does refer to money as filthy lucre. So there is, I'm not, I mean, there's an element of sin that's attached to all money
Yeah.
because of the way it's the currency for sin.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just
Go
thinking
ahead.
about all of the, there's so many implications of that, you know? It's like the money that we make in our paycheck could be bad in the sense that Well, I mean, what's Kaiser doing, for example?
I don't think you're accountable for that, John. Again, I
Okay.
think because
So I shouldn't just quit my job tomorrow?
no, I don't think you
I'm
have to. I
just...
think I what I think Paul deals with that when he talks about it's similar to the teaching on is it all right to eat meat that's been offered to an idol? There's obviously sin attached to that. If you, it be when meat that was offered to an idol, the people who offered it were committing idolatry. But Paul says, if in essence says, if you don't know it, when you go to the marketplace to buy meat,
See.
you don't know that, well, the butcher bought it from somebody who had already offered it as a sacrifice. He says, you're not, don't worry about it. It's
That's
not
a
going
good
to.
distinction. In other words, if someone gives you $100 and you don't know anything about it, you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But if you do know that, hey, we got this money from some old lady that we beat up and stole, then
Yeah.
it's like, well, now that's different.
Don't take it. I wouldn't.
Okay. No. I get you. That's a good distinction.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, that's different.
Yeah.
But if you know, then that is a problem.
Yeah. I think that's maybe the what in John, it's Joshua 7:10 through 14. Yeah, that's what we've been looking at. And the
And then there was a reference in Luke, you said? Or what was it in Luke?
no, I thought it was John. I'm just thinking of the verse, come out from among them and be separate and touch not the unclean thing. That phrase, the unclean thing, is what struck me when I was thinking about these associations, and I made that little note. So that's all that, and this revelation came, this teaching came out as a result of God answering Joshua's prayer. You know, he revealed the problem to him. In Joshua 10, there's another instance of prayer. Where Joshua prays and commands the sun to stand still. Now, this is interesting. There's another battle going on here. And this battle, Joshua is going to be fighting five Amorite kings. The king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, and the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, with all their armies. It's not Joshua, it's Gideon. Oh, yeah, Joshua, and joined forces and marched on Gibeon and camped against it and attacked it. Now, Gibeon were the people that deceived the Israelites and said, you know, we've come from a far country, make a treaty with us. Remember that story? Okay, let me refresh about the people of Gibeon. When the Israelites entered the Promised Land, they were told, don't make a treaty with anybody there because you're going to they're all proscribed. You have to stay separate from them. You're going to be fighting them. You shouldn't be aligning yourself in any way with them. But the people of Gibeon, learning, you know, having heard the stories of all the conquests so far, were afraid, and they disguised themselves as visitors from a far country, and they came and said, "Oh, we just come from a far country, and we'd like to make a treaty with you." And Joshua even says, "I can't make a treaty with you. Maybe you're somebody from this land that we're supposed to take over." And he said, no, we're from a far country. Make a treaty with us because we've heard about how great your God is and that he's helping you to destroy everyone, you know, who's in your path, so to speak. So he does, without inquiring of the Lord. So there's even a lesson here about inquiring of the Lord. And it's only later that they find out that they were tricked. But they've made the treaty, and in the terms of the treaty is that they're going to mutually defend one another. If one person's attacked, the other will help them. So all these kings are attacking Gibeon. Why? Because they made a treaty with Israel. It's like if Israel makes a treaty, if, or let's not say Israel, but if the Palestinians were to make a treaty with Israel, say, you could see all the other Arab countries saying, you can't do that. If you do that, we're going to attack you now. Well, that kind of thing, because you're betraying our cause, our common cause here.
Right.
You can't just surrender to the enemy.
I think that's exactly why, that's a great explanation. I was always wondering about that. Like, why don't they just make a peace treaty,
Unilaterally between the palace. Never happened.
because if the Palestinians do that, then they'll be attacked.
Could be. If they made a real peace treaty. See, up to now, all the peace treaties have been shams. They've just been excuses for both sides to build up forts, armies so they can have a bigger war later on. There hasn't been one peace treaty that was a real, okay, now we're all just one big family and we work together and cooperate and, we have no intention of harming each other. We're on the same team now. That has never happened. And if it ever did, that's exactly what would be the result. Sure.
But
Couldn't happen.
America has an alliance with Israel.
And there's a lot of antipathy to it. Look
I
at
mean,
all
no one attacks us.
there's reasons for
Right.
that. But it's not that there isn't an attack. It's just that there isn't going to be an obvious frontal, kinetic attack. But look at all the anti-American rhetoric and protest that's going on right now. That's a result of the friendship that was showed by the Trump administration. So there is an attack.
Through that alliance, I think they'd be blown off the face of the earth.
Who?
Israel. If America ever said, okay, we're going to withdraw our alliance, I don't think there'd be anything protecting them at that point.
Well, except God.
Right.
So I don't know. At the end of times, it says there's the all the armies are going to be surrounding Israel at the end of days. And that's when Christ is going to return to defeat the armies of the world.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But anyway, it says in verse 5, after these kings are camped around Gibeon, the people of Gibeon thereupon sent this message to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal. Do not fail your servants. Come up quickly and aid us and deliver us, for all the Amorite kings of the hill country have gathered against us. So Joshua marched up from Gilgal with his whole fighting force, all the trained warriors. The Lord said to Joshua, do not be afraid of them, for I will deliver them into your hands. Not one of them shall withstand you. Joshua took them by surprise, marching all night from Gilgal. The Lord threw them into a panic before Israel. Joshua inflicted a crushing defeat on them at Gibeon, pursued them in the direction of Beth Horon Ascent, and harried them all the way to Azekah and Makkedah. While they were fleeing before Israel down the descent from Beth Horon, the Lord hurled huge stones on them from the sky, all the way to Azekah, and they perished. More perished from the hailstones than were killed by the Israelite weapons. On that occasion, when the Lord routed the Amorites before the Israelites, Joshua addressed the Lord. He said in the presence of the Israelites, stand still, O sun of Gibeon, O moon in the valley of Ajalon. And the sun stood still and the moon halted, while a nation wreaked judgment on its foes, as is written in the book of Jasher. Thus the sun halted in mid-heaven and did not press on to set for a whole day. for the Lord fought for Israel. Neither before nor since has there ever been such a day when the Lord acted on words spoken by a man. So that was another prayer of Joshua's, where actually he not doesn't so much ask God to do something as he commands in the name of God. Isn't that interesting? Does that remind you of something that Jesus said? If you say to this mountain, be cast into the sea, and you have faith, it will be done. I think that's very interesting.
Please, yeah, well,
I think that's reflected in the book of Revelation too. We may have talked about this, you know, with the two witnesses. Because look what it says about them. It says that they have these extraordinary powers, right? It's I think it's in 17. It's before Babylon. I never can find it.
Let me see if I can find it. The two witnesses, where are they?
So,
Ah, 11.
11. Oh man. He says, I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. If any man will hurt them, fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. If any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. So for those 3.5 years, they have these tremendous powers, like Moses and like Joshua, I think. And when they shall finish their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottom pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. And the dead bodies shall lie in the street of that great city, which is spiritually called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 days and shall not suffer their dead bodies to put in graves. And they that dwell on the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwell on the earth. And after 3.5 days, the spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. And that's immediately before the return of Christ. Instead, it says they heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, come up hither. And they ascended up to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else in the book of Joshua on prayer.
Well, that's okay. I think that this was a really good study.
I had no, just I did make a little note on this was on Genesis. Now I'm going to stop. I think we should stop here. Okay, yeah, it was interesting, and
I thought it
we'll
was great.
profit from it. Very good.
Thank you. I'm going to stop the recording here.
Stop the recording and